Peace, party people, and welcome back to episode 157 of Where My Killer Tape At. I know it's been a minute. I'm doing a dry April, so no alcohol for your mans, but I'm back. Let's do this like Brutus. We're going to talk about why is it that a lot of these moguls are getting in trouble now and facing all these criminal charges. I also do a review on Dune 2. I talk about the woke X-Men. Word is born, giant size X-Men number one. And then I also talk about beef wraps. Word is born. Check it out. Killer tape, Abby. Just want to say this, free Palestine. I added this, late to this episode, but I think I talked about this before, where the Israeli incursion into Palestine is part of U.S. foreign policy. And I also talked about how the tactics that our police use in black and brown communities in the United States are the exact same ones used by the Israelis, right? Because in our communities, they use helicopters, they use drones, in some places, robot dogs, right? And protesting, to occupy areas and things of that nature. So it's the same thing. All the weapons the Israelis are using, the U.S. military industrial complex creates and uses as well. So all of that is tied together. So when we're giving money to Israel, it's part of our foreign policy. It's part of U.S. foreign policy. That's really what it is. It's not even Zionistic, you know what I mean? Because if that was the case, remember that the Israelis originally wanted to create a nation state inside Uganda, right? They would have just let them do it there. But that, you see my point? So that's part of U.S. foreign policy to keep Israel in that region because it destabilizes that region. And that's what that is for. So everything that you're seeing now, and I'm in solidarity with the protesters at those universities around the country. What you're seeing, the response, the U.S. police, which is more like a militaristic response in colleges, it's all part of U.S. foreign policy. Word is more. Yo, apologies. And I do have to do an apology to the listeners out there. I haven't been in here in a while. And there's no excuse, really. There really is no excuse because I'm having a pretty dope year so far. But I do want to apologize, and I will say that it has been overwhelming how much wild stuff has happened since the last time I dropped the episode. And man, it was like, and it's funny, if you look at my notebook, I just have notes and stuff that I'm gonna talk about this, I'm gonna talk about that, and then something else happens, and I'm like, you know what, I don't even want to talk about that no more. You know what I'm saying? Like, I really don't want to talk about that. But this is where I'm at right now, and I realize I gotta take my time. Summer's coming, so I'll probably drop some more episodes. But again, I just want to apologize to my listeners for those that are still here. Word is born. Yo, what did the late great MF Doom say? He said beef rap. I know he was talking about food, but every time I think about beef, I don't eat beef, so unless it's Churrasco steak. But every time I hear him say beef, you know what I mean? Beef rap, that's what I think about. And look, I'm an old school head. I love rap beefs. Let's go. But I'm not that dude that likes to hear gossip on the news. On the news, who watches the news? I don't want to hear gossip on the social media, none of that. Let's do this on wax. I know they don't put it on wax anymore, but that's what you used to say back in the day. Let's take it out on vinyl. Let's do this. Let's go on wax and just diss each other. Like, let's do that. You know what I mean? Shout out to K-Dot, who really tried to bring the pain. You know, and also shout out to J. Cole for bowing out. I appreciate that. You know, he again, a lot of people say, oh, he apologized to K-Dot. He didn't. He just said, hey, you know what?
this is, you know, this is not my thing. And that he admitted that he bowed to peer pressure to release that, to release that diss track. People will argue, well, it wasn't all that. Well, J. Cole is not a battle rapper, and I appreciate that he admitted to that, and that that's not his forte, and that he's not about that. Thought that was really, really dope. Drake, okay, I don't necessarily hate Drake. You know what I mean? I know a lot of my contemporaries don't like him. I like a lot of his stuff. I'm not a Drake fan, never bought an album, but because I'm not his demo, you know what I'm saying? So, I'm still a backpack rapper enthusiast, so that's what I'm about. But I see that Drake has sent some responses, and shout out to the big homie, because I think that Drake's response to K-Dot was distasteful. I really do. Now, I don't have an issue with you using somebody else's voice to do that. There's a lot of dope MCs that have done it before. Supernatural has done it in his battle raps. He sounded like Biggie Smalls when he's battled other people. You know what I mean? Black Thought is the king of MC impersonation. He's the king of that shit. Why is Black Thought the king of that shit? Is because Black Thought can actually not only rhyme and sound like that person, but he can use the same cadence and the same dated flow. So when he does Biggie, he rhymes like Biggie did back in the 90s. When he does Kool G Rap, he sounds like Kool G Rap in 88. When he does Big Daddy Kane, he sounds like Big Daddy Kane in 88. So that shit is, first of all, that shit is hard. You know what I mean? But he's the king of that. Look it up. He can do that. He can sound like your favorite MC. What Drake did, you know, the voice don't even really sound like Pop, and it don't sound like Snoop. And I don't know if he got permission to Snoop to use that, but I think it lacked taste. Just fucking battle. Now, if he was saying some wild shit and then he said something in Pac's voice, if he said the punchline in Pac's voice, I'd have been cool with that. But maybe I'm an old head. Maybe I'm an old head, right? Word up. But that being said, there's two things I'm not a fan of. Number one, you know, cats going on Instagram and dissing each other, or cats going on stage and then just doing a speech. You know what I mean? Like, because Drake did that before he did before he released that song. You know what I mean? Like, and then, you know, I know Rick Ross got issues with Drake, and he's calling him all kinds of names. Yo, Rick, do that shit on wax, man. Do that shit on, you know, do the diss track, yo. Like, what's up with all this gossiping and all this going on? And, you know, like, I don't do that, man. Like, come on, man. And again, I know I'm an old head. I get it. I'm an old head. But come on, man. Come on, man. Who's going to bring the pain, man? Who's bringing the pain? You going to tell me that Chris Brown, domestic violence Chris Brown, right, is harder than all of y'all, man? Come on, son. Come on, man. And let me just say this. Drake, none of them are really going to touch K-Dot. I just want to put that out there. They're not going to touch him. But, you know, it's still good to, like, yo, let's go. Let's do a couple of rounds. You know, let's throw out some diss tracks. Especially in this day and age where you could record it tonight and drop it tomorrow morning. You know, like, come on, man. Like, let's go hard, man. Let's do this, man. Let's do one for the ages, man. You know. Now, I do want to talk about what the big homie FD Signifier was talking about on his video. He said that the diss rap is extinct. It is no longer something that people do. And when he said that, it really made me change how I looked at this whole thing. And to be quite honest, I don't see anybody really getting into a rap beef where they just going back and forth, you know, through songs. They might go on Instagram and talk about their baby mama, or talk about, you know, when they used to mess with their ex-girlfriend or whatever, like, which I think is ridiculous. Like, I think it's really ridiculous. But I think that it's over. And here's why. Because a lot of artists, and I don't think, you know, and I think it's okay. Like, a lot of artists are fine where they at. Because in this day and age of the internet, you can have your audience. And it could be a small audience. And when I say audience, you can have, 50 to 60,000 fans, and they will always support you. You know what I mean? They will always support your material, show up to your shows. You could just really thrive in a region of the country and another region of the country don't know you. You know what I'm saying? Which I think is a good thing for the artists, right? Because they can eat and they don't have to go through no middleman, right? So you don't have to be the GOAT anymore. You know what I mean? You don't even have to claim to be the GOAT anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like, you really don't have to do that anymore. Whereas, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there was a GOAT. There was one person that was considered the best at the craft at the time. And you know what? None of us predicted this. None of us predicted this would happen, And I'm not saying it on some old, oh, this shit is whack or whatever. It's just that it's a part of emceeing that, like, for example, like freestyling. Like, cats don't freestyle no more. They write raps and they write writtens and then they spit them and they say that they freestyles. And that hurt, that hurt. And that's a particular skill set that a lot of people just don't really focus on anymore. You know what I mean? And then, like, when I see, like, people doing quote-unquote battle raps, they don't do it to beats. They just go back and forth. They pause. It's just not the same. And again, maybe I'm just an old head. You know what I mean? I can't let y'all go without a review. I wanted to talk about Dune 2. I know the last joint we saw was Monkey Man. Shout out to my youngest. We went to see Monkey Man, but I wanted to talk about Dune 2 and how dope it was. First of all, just y'all know I'm a Frank Herbert fan. Y'all know I love Frank Herbert. Wild stuff. His books are wild. I even read his son's name? He did a bunch of prequels. I even read a whole bunch of prequels, man. I think there's like maybe 3 prequels I did not read because I love the Dune universe so much. I love the Fremen. Anyway, this is directed once again by Denis Villeneuve. Am I saying that right? Denis Villeneuve. I'm trying to be Dominican here. Denis Villeneuve, right? Or Villeneuve. I know he's French. Stars Timothée Chalamet as Paul Atreides. Zendaya as Chani, his concubine. Rebecca Ferguson as Lady Jessica, Paul Atreides' mother. Christopher Walken as the Emperor, right? Stellan Skarsgård, man, that dude, man, he can act his ass off, as Baron Harkonnen. Javier Bardot as Stilgar, one of my favorite characters, and they got the right person to play him. Josh Brolin, you can never go wrong with him, as Gurney Halleck. And just wanted to say, yo, everybody did their thing in this joint. Everybody did their thing. And let me just say this. You cannot watch Dune 2 without watching Dune 1. Dune 1 is just world building. That's why a lot of people wasn't messing with it. It was beautiful. I'm not going to hold you. If you're not paying attention, you're going to miss a lot. Want to point out something that they never addressed. Because I know in the original Dune, they explained kind of like in the beginning, they kind of give you a brief synopsis of what happened before the events in Dune, right? So thousands of years ago, this was what was called the Butlarian Jihad, where the machines rose up against humanity, almost won, and humanity was able to beat back the machines. So in this universe, it is illegal to use computers, and it's illegal to have AI. So this is a universe where there's no AI, no internet, none of that stuff, right? So they use humanity learned how to replace those things using this thing called spice. Of course, I know I'm going on and on. And spice is only growing in one place, Arrakis, also known as Dune, right? So the Fremen are the people that are like the indigenous people of Dune, and they're always being oppressed I don't want to say the Empire, because it's about a bunch of houses that the Emperor oversees everything, right? So it's not like an Imperium, you know? Anyway, choreography was fucking amazing. Probably, for a big budget movie, probably some of the best choreography I've seen for a big budget movie. Did I just say that? I take that back. Because nothing's going to beat John Wick. Nothing's going to beat John Wick. At this day and age right now, nothing good could beat John Wick. I'm sure something down around the corner is going to come around and be better than. But Dune, for these big fight scenes against giant armies, fucking amazing. Shout out to Roger Wan for the choreography for the main characters. And then Alvin Katakutan who's from Canada. I knew it was Filipino. I knew it was a Filipino. When I saw the fight scenes, I was like, it got to be somebody from the Philippines who does Galianese as well as jiu-jitsu and Brazilian jiu-jitsu, because I could just tell. Beautiful. Cinematography, great. I think probably the things that stand out to me in this movie is that, well, I noticed there's no spoilers, right? Is that they kind of, in the books, they allude to it later on. They allude to it in Dune, the first book, but later on, they kind of bring it out that the Bene Gesserit, that group of women, they're like women warrior monks, scientific warrior monks, right? That they actually created like a false religion with a prophecy that Muad'Dib, the Kiswa Haderach, they got so many different names, right, will come and save the universe, right? And in it, Paul Atreides gets hip to the game very early. He's like, I know y'all trying to use me for your own little machinations, you know what I'm saying? Whereas in the book, Paul Atreides just follows, he goes through the motions. He just follows the prophecy and he goes along. But in the movie, they imply that they know that the Bene Gesserit did it. Chani, I like Zendaya as Chani. Chani in the book is just as fierce, but later on in the book, she kind of gets relegated to the background. And whereas here, she has more, she speaks more, and she has more depth to her character. And I like that she's seen as opposition to Paul Atreides. I don't know if they're going to go with, because, you know, in the book, she's his concubine, and she bears children for him. And really, the scenes that Paul is having, and this is a spoiler, the scenes that Paul is having in the movie, not the scenes, but the visions, is really his son, Leto II, who actually oppresses people the way he sees in his visions. But he is part of that path, right? So, yo, overall, recommend it, but you got to watch the first one, which you should be able to see, stream online. And then you got to see these things in the movies, though. Like, these kind of movies, you got to see it in the theater. It's like, it's not the same on a big giant flat screen TV, no matter how big it is. Word up. I wanted to talk about how, like, a lot of black media outlets are not talking about the Diddy situation, but I kind of feel like that's something that we should discuss on another day. It's just, what I do notice is a lot, there's an undercurrent, there's a discussion that's happening outside of that where people are saying, all of a sudden, why is Diddy in trouble? Why all these people coming out right now accusing Diddy of things he did, you know, a decade ago or 15 years ago, right? Even though the one person, you know, his ex-girlfriend said this happened, you know, a couple years ago. It wasn't like something that happened, you know, 20 years ago, right? And then you have who was he, a photographer, a producer, a video producer, who also has a bunch of allegations out, and they were as recently as 2022, right? So it's not old stuff, you know what I mean? But if you look at people like Diddy, you look at people, you know, like if you look at Harvey Weinstein, if you look at people like Bill Cosby, and a lot of them are getting in trouble for things that happened decades ago. And people are wondering, why is that happening? Why are people not coming? Why didn't it come out back then? We know, first of all, that we do a lot of victim blaming. We'd be the Olympic gold medalist of victim blaming if there was an Olympic sport, right? You know, and on top of that, when it comes to rape culture, nobody cares. Nobody cares about the victims. And plus, a lot of these victims are women, right? So nobody gives a fuck. And even much so if they're like, for example, black boys too, right? Because people always say, oh, well, boys get raped too. Well, when Bambaataa was raping black boys, no one was saying anything either, right? No one cares about the victims, right? But I like to call this the Cosby effect. Why I call it the Cosby effect? Because he's probably the best example of someone who was able to get away with something for decades, right? And harm, you know, scores, maybe hundreds of people, right? And if you think about it, you know, and I know a lot of this stuff is alleged, Cosby was probably the worst serial rapist of the 20th century. right? When you really think about it, right? And the same could be said for African Mbata, right? Anyway, the reason why I'm talking about them is because the reason why they got away with stuff for so long, because there was a time when Bill Cosby in the 80s and 90s was a gatekeeper, right? And what I mean by gatekeeper, not only is he a gatekeeper for your success as an actor, right, or a director or a producer or a cinematographer, he was also someone that helped other people become millionaires as well. So people around him were able to become successful. People that worked for him, people that worked in network TV, they were able to become millionaires and very powerful because of Cosby. So for a lot of people, their success is tied to Cosby, right? So in a way, some people become loyal, powerful people, and they may not be as powerful as he was, but they were powerful enough that they were loyal to him because, you know, hey, he looked out for me. He helped get me to where I am now. Of course, I'm going to be loyal. And that's why a lot of the people that were on the Cosby Show has staunchly defended him, because he was key to their success, right? So, and again, 80s and 90s, Cosby was powerful. He's a very, very powerful figure, right? And I'm not even talking about the NBC stuff, because the thing about the NBC stuff was it's something that he considered, and NBC just said no to him. That's all that was. Like, but just the fact that he was able to consider that and NBC was able to reply to him says something about how powerful he was. In 2010, 2015, 2020, Cosby does not have the same power and influence that he had in the 80s and 90s, right? So there was less people people were less apt to protect him, right? And a lot of the victims felt safe enough to come out because he could ruin you in the 80s and 90s, right? So that, you know, and it's funny because I know there's one person supermodel who stated that he did try to drug her, but she knew what it was, right? She came out with that, you know, 10 years ago. She didn't come out with that in the 80s and 90s, right? So that just goes to show that these men are no longer as powerful as they were. You know, same thing with Diddy, right? Late 90s, early 2000s, Diddy was the fucking man. He was a gatekeeper, right? There were a lot of people that were tied to his success. They were loyal to him. There's a bodyguard who came out now, and he's probably in his 50s, right? And he's running around YouTube, you know, spilling all the tea, right? And telling us all the things that Diddy did, right? But for a very long time, he worked for him. He probably was afraid to come out, you know what I'm saying, seeing what he saw. But now Diddy doesn't have the same power that he did back in that time, right? So, and that's why I call it the Cosby effect. You know, that's why these things happen. That's why, you know, Harvey Weinstein. It's funny because when I look at old movies, like, you know, in you know, the 90s, the early aughts, even in the 80s, Weinstein was everywhere. Like, he was freaking everywhere. Like, he touched everything, man. He would, like, you couldn't green light a movie without him. Just go look at all your old faves. You're going to be like, oh, shit, Weinstein Productions. It just keeps Weinstein Management. It just comes up. It's a big W, almost like the Woo and shit, and it just comes up. So for a long time, he was a gatekeeper. He was the man, you know. So now, not so much, you know. He doesn't have the same power and authority that he had, the same influence. So a lot of his victims are able to come out and be safe enough to blow the whistle on them. So that's what happens. I hope that helps out. Word. Don't come. How that song go? I stay woke. Yeah, you know what I mean? I stays woke. And you know what? Let's not let the GOP turn that word into something that's bad. Because the other day I went to a conference, and it was like hating on it. And I had to push back a little bit. I had to be like, come on, y'all. Come on, man. What is we talking about here, right? Anyway, speaking of woke, the X-Men 97. I'm not going to do a review of it now. I'm supposed to get with the homie, maybe Zemo, maybe somebody else, maybe somebody new. Shout out to the big homie Zemo, though. But I want to just say real quick that the giant-sized X-Men 1975. Right? I came out before my time, right? I had a chance to revisit it. I had purchased a reprint of X-Men, Giant Size X-Men number 1. And then I started revisiting the classic X-Men from 1986 to 2000. Marvel republished it as I was reading Chris Claremont's run on the X-Men. So I grew up on Chris Claremont's run on the X-Men, right? I did, while at the same time, read the classic X-Men with John Byrne and Len Wein and Dave Cockrum and all those dudes, right? Rest in peace to Len Wein. He co-created Wolverine. He passed away in 2017. And Dave Cockrum, who passed away in 2006, both heavyweights and pioneers in comic books. But anyway, there was a time back in the day when Jack Kirby and Stan Lee created the X-Men, right? The Uncanny X-Men. And when they first came out, they did pretty good. So it was Professor Xavier, and the founding members were Cyclops, Beast, Angel, Jean Grey, and Bobby Drake, Iceman, right? So that was the original group. What started to happen was in the early 70s, the sales started to slump, right? They weren't selling as many copies. The stories are kind of dry, right? So what happened? In comes Len Wein and Dave Cockrum. And in 1975, they released a giant-sized X-Men, and they introduced a brand new team, with the exception of Cyclops, and they brought back Jean Grey. So it was Cyclops, Jean Grey, but also it was Colossus from Russia, Storm, a.k.a. Aurora Monroe from Kenya, right? Banshee from Ireland, Sunfire from Tokyo, Japan, and Thunderbird, an indigenous person from the United States of America. So that's what Nightcrawler from Germany. There you go. That was my team. That was my X-Men team. That will always be my favorite X-Men team since then. It's always been my favorite X-Men team. So he introduced them. So here they come, and they diversify the team of the X-Men. And what happens? It's a fucking hit. It's a hit. Everybody loves that X-Men team. You know what I mean? Oh, yeah, Wolverine's in it. Did I mention Wolverine? Yeah, Wolverine, Logan was in it, right? With a new story and everything, you know what I mean? So they brought him in. So when I hear people say, oh, you know, X-Men 97 is woke, I'm like, you like, what's that? You like 50 years too late, bro. Because in 1975, they diversified the team and it sold bad books. To this day, Giant Size X-Men number one is considered one of the best comic books ever put out. You know what I mean? Like, crazy. You know what I mean? They introduced Krakoa, which we're just leaving the Krakoan Age and X-Men right now. So it's crazy to me to hear people say that. I'm like, what have you been reading? You know what I mean? Like, what have you been reading? You know what I'm saying? So shout out to the late, great Len Wein and Dave Cockrum. Word is born. I haven't done a health segment in a while, so might as well start now. Starting to warm up, you know what I mean? Everybody's trying to get into their quote-unquote beach bodies. I'm going to be honest with you. I really think we need to change the way we look at what beautiful is, how beautiful our bodies are, because I feel like our bodies are beautiful for us, you know what I mean? Can we use some work here and there? Yeah, I'm not saying that we can't. I'm not saying, you know what I'm saying, that you shouldn't look to improve how you look. But you should improve how you look for you, not for nobody else. You should improve how you look, not to fit into a particular outfit. You know what I mean? Because a lot of us are beautiful and we wear what we wear very well. You know what I mean? And then there's a way to wear outfits to make yourself look really dope. You know what I mean? Like the cut for men, that's definitely the cut, right? Anyway, a good tidbit, a good way to get a workout done is walking. It's the most natural way. It's the easiest and most cheapest way to do it, walking. Because mind you, we don't do a lot of walking. We really don't. We really, really, really don't. The average person in the United States of America, I'm talking about United States of America, doesn't do a lot of walking. And walking is dope, man. Walking is fun, especially when you do it with people that you love and people that you like hanging out with. Like if there's some coworkers that you like, you should go for a walk. You know what I mean? Join a hiking club. That's dope. I have a hiking club that I run here locally. And we really have a good time when we go hiking. So, again, it's getting warm. Take advantage of it. Get your walk on. And if you're going by yourself, listen to your favorite podcast. You can listen to my podcast, Word is Born. There you go. Shameless plug, right? But get your walk on, man. Word is born. It's again, it's the cheapest, easiest, and you can have a great time. I know I do. Have dope conversations. Find a scenic route in your community. You don't have to go out your way. You know what I mean? So try it. Work. Yes. Peace. If you want to continue the discussion on your social media, make sure you do the hashtag where my killer tape at. Where my and killer spelled K-I-L-L-A tape at. You can find me on Instagram at Brother Omi. You could also find me on Threads as Brother Omi as well. Check the website, man. Omi's Bench, O-M-I-S-B-E-N-C-H. Go on there, .com, and you can find all my contact information. Word is born. Because remember, I'm no longer on Twitter. If you have any show ideas, you could always email me at dantresomi@gmail.com. dantresomi@gmail.com. Matter of fact, if you just Google dantresomi, dantresomi, you can find all my information for that. Yo, I appreciate it. Check the show notes. I have a link. And you can buy a coffee mug with my likeness on it, with my killer tape at. I'm trying to sell 100. I know nowhere near that. But if you can support your mans, please do so. Thank y'all for the love. I appreciate y'all for sticking with me. Word is born. Peace.